Welcome to Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph Perek Chet, Chapter 8. In the last perek, we learned that Shmuel traveled throughout Israel to judge the people, making it easier for them to access him without the expense and discomfort that traveling to him would entail. We saw that Shmuel went to great lengths to avoid taking money and sustenance from the people he served. The Gemara in Masechet Brachot 10b suggests that a leader who is offered benefits by his people may choose to either accept or decline, and Shmuel is cited as the paradigm for one who refrains from benefiting from others and is able to do so without creating any sense of arrogance or dissonance between himself and those people who wish to be his benefactors. This assured that, first of all, he would be able to judge fairly, with no bias even subconsciously affecting his judgment. And secondly, the people would feel that their status was immaterial to him, so that a poor person would feel equally comfortable coming to him for help as a wealthy one, and no one would hold back from bringing a case before him because they were concerned about whether their gift would be acceptable. For most of Shmuel's lifetime, he judged the people peacefully and lovingly, and the peace that ensued following the victory against the Plishtim endured. Sadly, our perek today opens with a disappointing account of Shmuel's legacy. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Vayhi ka'asher zaken Shmuel, vayasem et banav shoftim li Yisrael. As Shmuel grew old, he appointed his sons to judge Israel. Pasuk Bet, verse 2, Vayhi shem beno habechor Yoel, v'shem mishnehu Avia, shoftim b've'er shava. His elder son was named Yoel, and his second son was Avia, and they judged in Be'er Sheva. Radak explains that this is the first intimation that Shmuel's sons did not follow in their father's footsteps. Not only did they not travel to the people and demanded that the people come to them, but they situated themselves in Be'er Sheva, in the far reaches of the country at its southern border. They did so out of greed, because this created more business for their scribes and court officials who were paid for their efforts. And this hint is followed by an outright statement of their misconduct. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Velo halchu banav bidrachav, vayitu achari habatza, vayikhu shochad, vayatu mishpat. His sons did not follow in his ways. They were swayed by profit. They accepted bribery and perverted justice. Even if his sons were motivated by financial gain, how could the sons of Shmuel have strayed so far from his teachings as to have accepted bribery? Musar HaNevi'im explains that there are some forms of what might be considered bribery that are permissible, such as if a judge accepts money from both litigants to cover his costs if he misses a day of work in order to judge the case. Nevertheless, a higher standard was expected of the sons of Shmuel, and in their case, people considered it a perversion of justice. Technically permissible, but ethically, morally, not the most upstanding behavior. Disappointed by their behavior, the people gathered together and approached Shmuel at his home in Ramah and presented to him their request. Pasuk hei vayomru elav, Hine ata zakanta, uvanecha lo halchu bidrachecha, ata sima lanu melech l'shofteinu kichol hagoyim. Behold, you have grown old, and your sons have not followed in your ways. Now give us a king to judge us like all the nations. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Vayera hadavar be'inei Shmuel ka'asher amru tzna lanu melech l'shofteinu. Vayitpalel Shmuel el Hashem. Their request was bad in the eyes of Shmuel, that they had said, give us a king to judge us. And Shmuel prayed to Hashem. At first glance, it's a little puzzling why this idea was so displeasing to Shmuel. After all, there are three mitzvot that the Jewish people were commanded to fulfill upon entering the land: to eradicate Amalek, to appoint a king, and to build the Beit HaMikdash. So what's so wrong with the people's request? It's a mitzvah. Many commentators throughout the centuries have wrestled with this particular question and suggested different resolutions. So we're going to look at just several examples of their suggestions. Radak explained that even though it is a positive mitzvah to appoint a king, the people didn't ask l'shem mitzvah for the sake of fulfilling the commandment. Their request was motivated simply by self-interest. And this is intensified by the phrase, Kechol Hagoyim, like all the nations. The purpose of a Jewish king is to serve as a conduit between Hashem and man, enabling man to come closer to Hashem through his personal example and through his teachings. The exemplar of such a king is David HaMelech, King David. Here, however, the people sinned by failing to distinguish themselves from the nations of the world, failing to appreciate the moral system of the Torah, which the king is charged with representing, and merely asked for a king who would serve the same function as kings of other nations. This failure, says Radak, demonstrated a critical flaw in their fundamental emunah and bitachon, their belief and trust in Hashem. Malbim offers three suggestions as to why the request was problematic. First, he cites the teaching of Chazal that she'aluhu shelo be'onato. They asked at an inappropriate time. Had they been living in a time in which moral and national guidance was lacking, when Hashem's involvement in Jewish history was concealed and inaccessible, then the demand for a king would have been legitimate and even praiseworthy. Such a king would have been designated to teach the nation and return them to Hashem, such that Hashem would once again make his presence felt among them through miraculous salvation. However, they were living under Shmuel's constant guidance and leadership. They had nothing to fear in war or in peace, for Hashem's presence was accessible to them through Shmuel's prophecy. Thus, their request was felt as a rejection of Shmuel's leadership and an implication that they would prefer a king like the nations of the world who was disconnected from spirituality and would rule only according to natural law. Secondly, the Malbim sees their request as personally insulting to Shmuel. Had they asked for a king to lead them in war or as a political figure, then perhaps it wouldn't have been quite so offensive. But their request for a king, l'shofteinu, to judge us, was humiliating to Shmuel, implying that he wasn't doing his job. And thirdly, similar to Radak's interpretation, the phrase l'shofteinu kechol hagoyim, to judge us like all the nations, implied that they wanted a king who would rule according to the law as he saw fit, not necessarily according to the laws of the Torah. One last suggestion, that of Musar HaNevi'im, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Ginsburg, the mitzvah to appoint a king in Sefer Devarim, chapter 17, verse 15, reads, Som tasim alecha melech, asher yivchar Hashem elokecha bo. Mikerav achecha tasim alecha melech. Lo tuchal latet alecha ish nochri, asher lo achicha hu. Place upon yourselves a king whom Hashem, your God, will choose. From among your brothers you will place upon yourselves a king, not a foreigner, who is not your brother. Rav Ginsburg notes the distinction between the wording of the mitzvah, sim alecha, som tasim alecha, place upon you, and the wording of the request as Shmuel perceives it in verse 6, tna lanu, give to us. The role of the king is intended to inspire awe and reverence, again as a conduit that would lead to greater yirat shamayim, fear of heaven. The people, rather than requesting such a lofty, exalted role, demanded a king who would be lanu, to us. He'll be subject to our approbation. He goes on to explain that this helps us understand why Hashem acquiesced to their request if it was inappropriate. Hashem only agreed to give them a king when they ultimately repented and asked for a king who would rule over them, and they agreed to subject themselves to his Torah-mandated authority. Thus, when Shmuel prayed to Hashem, Hashem responded in verse 7, Vayomir Hashem el Shmuel, Shma b'kol ha'am l'chol asher yomru elecha, ki lo otcha ma'asu, ki oti ma'asu mimloch aleihem. Hashem said to Shmuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they have said to you, for it is not you they have rejected, it is me they have rejected from ruling over them. Hashem continued to frame the people's request as consistent with their behavior throughout the centuries, demonstrating to Shmuel, it's not personal. Rather, it's part of the historical character of the Jewish nation to reject Hashem and his teachings. Perhaps a new form of leadership, one that they see themselves as having chosen, will succeed in bringing them closer to Hashem. Nevertheless, the people must be warned that the king will wield considerable authority, and they will have to subject themselves to his will. V'higavt lahem mishpat hamelech asher yimloch aleihem. Tell them the manner of behavior of the king who will rule over them. And Shmuel did as Hashem instructed him. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Vayomer, Ze yihye mishpat hamelech asher yimloch aleichem. This will be the protocol of the king who will rule over you. He will draft your sons as his charioteers and cavalry, and they will run before his chariot. He will appoint for himself officers of thousands and officers of 50 to plow his land and reap his harvest, to prepare his weapons and his chariots. He will draft your daughters to be his perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will commandeer your best fields, vineyards, and olive groves to give to his servants, and will confiscate a tenth of your grain and vineyards and give them to his officers and servants. He will take your servants and maids and the best of your young men and your donkeys and use them for his own service. He will tithe your sheep, and you will be his servants. On that day you will cry out because of the king whom you have chosen, and Hashem will not answer you on that day. There's a disagreement in the Gemara as to whether this picture of the monarchy constitutes the king's lawful prerogative or whether it is a prophecy that the kings would ultimately abuse their power. It's possible to argue each side, and the argument is unresolved. Pasuk Yudtet, verse 19, Vayima'anu ha'am lishmoa bekol Shmuel. Vayomru lo, ki im melech yiye aleinu. Vehayinu gam anachnu kechol hagoyim, ushfatanu malkeinu, viyatzalifaneinu, v'nilchamet milchamoteinu. The people refused to listen to the voice of Shmuel and insisted, no, there shall be a king over us, and we too will be like all the nations, and our king will judge us and fight our battles. And here too, the commentators are divided as to whether the people are persisting in their inappropriate demand for a king, insisting that the picture painted by Shmuel was extreme and would never come to pass, or whether, as suggested earlier by Musar HaNevi'im, they are expressing their readiness to accept the rule of a king who would rule according to the authority of the Torah and to whom they would willingly submit. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, Vayishma Shmuel et kol divrei ha'am, vayidabrem be'oznei Hashem. Vayomer Hashem el Shmuel, Shma bekolam vihimlachta lahem melech, vayomer Shmuel al anshei Yisrael, lechu ish le'iro. Shmuel heard all the words of the people. According to Malbim, he sensed the positive shift in their tone and reported to Hashem. Hashem told Shmuel, heed their voice and appoint a king over them. And Shmuel told the people to return to their homes, for the matter was now in Hashem's hands. He would be the one to choose the king who would rule over them in Shmuel's place. Thank you for learning together. Le'ilui nishmot imhotenu hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer, aleha shalom, and Sarah Schenker, aleha shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.